Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, we got a great show for you here on this Freedom Friday. Coming up later in the hour, Becky Hillier is going to join us and help share this great story, this incredible, incredibly inspiring story of the rodeo great J.R. Vazane. J.R. Vazane is going to join us later in the hour as well. Very much looking forward to that. But first, hey, earlier this year, we were first to break the news. Not only do we have a new Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court with Corey Swanson, one of the sons of Montana, who is really working hard to restore fairness and integrity to the Montana Supreme Court, but he's going to need some more backup, and that's where Judge Dan Wilson comes in. I was so pleased to hear that Judge Dan Wilson is having another run at it, making another run at the Montana Supreme Court, because so many of these statewide candidates that are now statewide elected officials, they ran for statewide office once, didn't make it the first time, but they ran again, and now they're statewide office holders. Judge Wilson, great to have you here on Friday's Montana Talks. Thanks for being with us.
Well, what a pleasure it is to join you this morning, Aaron, on Montana Talks. I always appreciate this opportunity.
So tell us why you wanted to make another run at the Montana Supreme Court. For those who don't remember, you were the judge who stood up for freedom during COVID-19 and when a lot of judges were not standing up for the Constitution.
Well, I'm running to finish what I started. I spent a lot of time and effort last time around traveling all over Montana so that people could get a look at me, they could listen to me, hear me talk, shake my hand, look me in the eye. That takes an awful lot of time. I'd never run for an office outside of Flathead County. And so all of that time and commitment built up quite a reservoir and a network of support. And I'm looking to build on that and finish up with a successful run next year for the seat that's being vacated by the announced retirement of Justice Baker.
Looks like the effort's going pretty well so far, too. I mean, you just announced a big fundraising haul in just three short months already.
It's humbling and it's overwhelming. When I was talking to people last time around and said, "Hi, I'm Dan Wilson, I'm running for the Supreme Court," they said, "Who? Who are you?" And this time when I contact them, they say, "How can I help you?" And you can't believe how refreshing that is, but how overwhelming it is to know that people have looked into you, looked hard at your background, looked hard at your philosophy, and decided this is the candidate we're going to back.
It's so critical that we bring fairness and justice to the Montana Supreme Court. In my perspective, it's a radical left-wing mob that is trampling on the voice of the people and the will of the people by pushing their own personal, political, partisan agendas. And so that's why we need somebody like Judge Dan Wilson there to bring justice and fairness back to the court. We're going to talk more with Judge Wilson. Plus, we're taking your phone calls as well, back right after this.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, so I referenced that Judge Dan Wilson has very strong fundraising coming in right now. Earlier this month, Judge Dan Wilson's campaign announced his first quarter fundraising total, raising $113,000 since kicking off his campaign for the Montana Supreme Court in April. Now, let's put that in perspective. During his 2024 campaign, he raised a total of just over $409,000, meaning that just here in this first quarter, and the election's not till next year, he's already raised over one quarter of all of the funds that he raised last cycle. So that is very good news when it comes to the campaign to bring justice and fairness back to the Montana Supreme Court, if you ask me. Judge Wilson, you know, a lot of our listeners know you because you're one of the most transparent Supreme Court candidates that we've seen. You know, you're taking phone calls, you're trial. I first ran into you in Malta back in December of 2023. But a lot of people are wondering, who is this Judge Amy Eddy, who just announced that she is going to be your Democrat opponent in the Supreme Court race next year? Because it's very clear off of her track record that she is a far-left Democrat. Ron in Big Fork was the first to point out how she is a soft-on-crime liberal judge, but now we've seen her campaign contributions. She donated to Hillary Clinton and a whole bunch of radical environmental causes as well.
Well, we are colleagues, the two of us. Judge Eddy is a judge here in Flathead County along with me. She was appointed to the bench when Judge Ted Lempis retired. Both of us put in for the appointment. I put in for the appointment as well. At that time, I was elected Justice of the Peace in Flathead County and decided that I wanted to try out the district court for some greater responsibility in public service. And our two names, along with the name of another lawyer, were advanced to Governor Bullock. And we all interviewed with the governor, and ultimately he selected Judge Eddy and appointed her. And the process was interesting. I don't know that I consider it always to be choosing the very best candidates without any sort of political influence at all. I couldn't say that politics didn't play some kind of role in that decision. But anyway, the background, I would say the difference in philosophy and approach between myself and my opponent comes down to this. I view the Constitution as a contract, as a written agreement. It's plain and black and white between the citizens of Montana and its government. And it spells out how the citizens agree to be governed. And very critical in the debate for the Constitutional Convention, there were two proposals that were almost identical, but two proposals to declare that the entire environment in Montana is held in trust and giving the individuals the right to sue to enforce that right. And those two proposals were voted down in their respective committees. They were advanced further by proposed amendment on the floor of the entire convention, and every single time that issue came up, it was voted down, it was rejected. And so that proposal didn't make it into the Constitution. It's not what the voters adopted in 1972. But this was the very theory that was advanced by my opponent in 2011 directly in the Supreme Court with a lawsuit that was filed there, asking the Supreme Court to declare the atmosphere of public trust and then take the unprecedented political step of ordering the state and its legislature to adopt appropriate regulations to regulate all carbon emissions in Montana and, if necessary, appoint a judge to oversee it. And when I look at the Constitution and its history, I'm there to look at what the founders wanted, what they discussed, what they debated, not only what they passed, but sometimes more importantly, what they rejected. And what they rejected was also rejected by the Supreme Court in 2011. And my opponent published an article in the Montana Lawyer saying that the same theory would be presented in the district court in a follow-up subsequent litigation, and it was, and that was the Held case. And in that case, again, Judge Seeley in Helena was asked to declare the environment a public trust, to order that the state adopt appropriate regulations to limit carbon emissions and then monitor and enforce it. And Judge Seeley said, you know what? That is a political question. That's one that courts are not able to answer. And that's the correct answer. Judge Seeley got it right for the long-established reason in doctrine in constitutional law that courts don't legislate.
That's very interesting. So she wasn't the judge on that case. She was an activist lawyer trying to push a climate alarmist agenda that would basically shut down the Montana economy and go after basically any sort of carbon emissions. It could kill so much of our economy, so much of our economic sector, all because of her radical environmentalist views. She went even further than some of the already liberal environmental judges that are on the bench. Judge Wilson, hold that thought. I want you to tell me if I captured that correct there, because I'm looking at a laundry list of her campaign contributions, and she's donated to radical environmentalists. She donated to Hillary Clinton. So she sounds definitely like a hardcore leftist. Stand by.
In the Fast Lane.
Shane Van Gisbergen is having himself one heck of a month.
It's a road course runaway. Shane Van Gisbergen dominates and wins Sonoma.
That was courtesy of TNT as Van Gisbergen won the Toyota SaveMark 350 at Sonoma Raceway. It was the second straight victory for Van Gisbergen, who took home the checkered flag in the streets of Chicago the week before. The New Zealander won his third straight road course race from the pole position, matching the feat Jeff Gordon accomplished in the 1990s. Van Gisbergen dominated in wine country, leading 97 of the 110 laps. Chase Briscoe, Chase Elliott, Michael McDowell, and Christopher Bell rounded out the top five. The Cup Series now heads to Dover Motors Speedway on Sunday for the Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 400. With just six races remaining on the schedule until the 16-driver field for the playoffs is set, William Byron still sits atop the Cup Series standings, 14 points up on Chase Elliott. For Fox in the Fast Lane, I'm Joe Morgan, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, before we go back to just who is Judge Amy Eddy, the far-left Democrat candidate for Montana Supreme Court, running for that seat next year. Of course, Judge Dan Wilson, the judge who stood up for freedom during COVID-19, he is running once again as well, which is great news. But before we go back to, highlighting this laundry list of Democrat Party campaign contributions, far-left environmental group contributions from Amy Eddy, let's go to a question here from one of our listeners. And by the way, you can call in right now, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app. Tom in Bozeman called in a question for you, Judge Wilson. This was the question from Tom in Bozeman. He says, do you believe there is a black robe insurrection from judges against the president of the United States with all these judges, nationwide injunctions, et cetera? And I would add to Tom's question, is there a similar thing going on here in Montana with the Supreme Court and some of these left-wing district judges constantly pushing their own personal agenda to block, these laws that were signed by the governor and supported by big majorities in the Montana legislature as well?
The nationwide injunction thing is such a curious phenomenon to me because it's been used in almost unprecedented fashion. There have been so many. And the difficult thing when you see a report on a judge's decision is to know, to sort of distinguish or discern the case where the judge appears to be taking on a more activist, outside of the law approach to the decision, or is merely following the law. And the nationwide injunctions are a great example. We've all heard and seen the news of those. There was a case recently here in Montana where I'll use as an example where I think a judge acted entirely appropriately. The judge in Missoula, Judge Christensen, had a case where a man was detained in Helena and ultimately was ordered to appear in an immigration court. But he and his attorneys brought a petition for habeas corpus to to get released from custody outside of that immigration proceeding. And the judge ordered a temporary stay of that decision, Judge Christensen did, but he did it only long enough to make the decision first whether he had the authority to even grant the relief they were requesting. So it's kind of like in a football game, when the referee calls a timeout to review the instant replay and then takes as much time as he needs to or she needs to see what happened and then make a ruling. And that's what he did. He said he came back, he honored his first principles, which is not to say to the judge, him or herself, do I want to grant this relief, but does the law even allow me to? And that was his answer. He said, you know, the law says this has to go to the immigration court. You can present all your arguments here. And he dismissed the case. And that was a case where you'd say there was no activism. This was just a judge following the law. But had it been sort of an activist ruling, it would be kind of like a referee calling a game for rain and then ordering at the same time that every game going on all over the country get called for rain too, even though there was no evidence that it was raining anywhere else. So that's how the nationwide injunctions are, and our Supreme Court has trimmed those back severely and said, look, you decide the case in front of you. You don't get to decide hypothetically the case of anyone else who might be appearing anywhere else in any other court or any other circumstance. So that is how I look at judicial activism when it comes to these nationwide injunctions. And I would describe that even though it is sometimes hard to see or tell a legitimate decision from an activist court, I look to see, is the ruling based on the actual facts of the case?
That's right. And that story that you referenced, by the way, yeah, that was the one where you see the liberal media referring to the guy as a Helena man. And it's like, the guy is from Mexico. He's an illegal alien. Yeah, he got detained in Helena, but he is an illegal alien from Mexico. But it's like so many in the media, you know, you talk about, you know, some judges don't want to rely on case law and the Constitution and on evidence and on is this my jurisdiction or not. And in so much of the media, they don't even want to rely on basic facts here. Steve in Helena called in and left a message with our producer. He says, I can never get information on judges. Where is the GOP? Is the GOP endorsing a candidate? I don't know if the GOP has made an endorsement for next year's Supreme Court race or not, but I did see you at the GOP convention, and like any judicial candidate, I'm sure you traveled to all sorts of groups, left, right, center, whatever. So, Judge, I was talking about how your far-left opponent, Judge Amy Eddy, I mean, she donated to the Montana Conservation Voters. They're a far-left environmental activist group. She had a laundry list of, I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars she's donated to Democrat causes, Democrat candidates, or radical environmental groups. She even donated to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. Now, on the flip side, I know, you know, our listeners know you well. I thought it was interesting. I was chatting with Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter. And a lot of people don't know this. He is one of the best sheriffs out there. He is one of the most conservative sheriffs out there, the most constitutional sheriffs out there. He used to be a Democrat. And then he left the Democrat Party and is now a Republican. But I kind of in a similar regard, I know some folks have been attacking you because, 20 years ago or so, I think you donated to, one or two Democrat campaigns, including one to John Tester about 20 years ago or so. What would you say to your critics who say, wait a minute, is this judge a constitutional judge or not?
Well, the contribution had nothing to do with my views on the Constitution, my role as a lawyer or a judge. At that time, we had just gotten embroiled in a second Iraq war. I wasn't convinced it was in America's best interest to be in that war because although Saddam Hussein was no friend of America, he also was no friend of Iran. And I thought that this war was going to turn into likely a forever war. Lots of young men and women dying for a cause that I thought ultimately was going to go to strengthen the hand of Iran in that region. And I believe I was right. And I didn't know it at the time, but President Trump, who was then a private citizen, opposed the war for the same reason. You know, I think that was Dick Cheney's war. That was Don Rumsfeld's war. And at that time, John Tester was one of the only people in Montana who was speaking out against it. Maybe those weren't his precise arguments, but I thought someone needs to take a realistic look at foreign policy. But then over time, I became disillusioned with Senator Tester's conduct in the Senate, where, you know, he had promised to be moderate and put Montana first and reach across the aisle. And I just didn't see any evidence of that. And so,
yeah, like so many other Montanans.
That was the one time.
Yeah, I ran into one-time contribution 20 years ago. And I ran into so many Montanans who last year when I was out doing these events all across the state, they said, oh, yeah, I voted for that guy in 2006. Never again. Never again. Let's go to Skip in Hamilton. Skip, did you have a quick question or comment for Judge Wilson?
Well, thank you, sir. And Judge Wilson, I can tell you over here in Ravalli County, a lot of people are getting educated about how important it is that we fix the ridiculousness in our Supreme Court of the state of Montana. And, sir, something that we've talked about on the radio before, and it's a point that people can get educated about, and it has to do with when a judge should use precedent law in his decision rather than be taking the issue apart differently. Would you please explain what that is when precedent law is used? And
yeah, when is precedent law used? Why does that matter? Great question, Skip. Thanks for that call. And, Judge, I want to get your response to that, but let's sneak in another caller here as well real fast. We got John Sinrud on the phone lines from the Flathead. John, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for the call.
Well, here's my comment. Judge Wilson, I'm going to give you two thumbs up. I may not agree with all of your rulings. However, you do not go outside of the law in your rulings, in my opinion. However, your opponent specifically violated state law under a tenant-landlord issue when the law says when a judge rules in favor of a landlord, they're to give a writ of possession and an immediate writ of assistance to the landlord, and she allowed an individual to stay in a property, damage the property more, but gave that individual 30 to 60 days to stay in that property, and the property was destroyed so bad that the owner had to demo the whole house.
Wow.
And my point being is that the law is written by the legislature. It is your job as a judge in court to enforce the law the way it's written unless a constitutional issue is brought up and then determined whether to be constitutional or not.
Well said. Well said, John. I got to hold that thought. We got to take a quick break here shortly. Real quick reaction to either one of those calls, Judge Wilson, and then we'll come back to you after the break for some final thoughts as well.
Okay. Well, precedent is the law. It's what tells us what we're supposed to do in this case because it's already been decided in a case that's so similar that there's really no argument about what the law is and what it's supposed to be and how to follow it. The question about whether, you know, the GOP is going to endorse a candidate in this race, I went to the convention as I have to so many events because I was invited.
All right. Hold that thought. We'll get some final thoughts from Judge Dan Wilson right after this, and then great guest.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordland.
This week, Ledger Montana farmer John Wicks joined bankers and ag lenders in testifying to a House Agriculture subcommittee calling for higher loan limits, more flexibility, and faster approvals in USDA's Farm Service Agency loan programs.
My first experience with FSA loan programs was when I was 14 years old. I received a $5,000 youth loan to purchase cattle, and I ran those cattle alongside my dad's herd for 4 years. The proceeds helped fund my college education.
Wicks said an FSA loan helped him take over the family farm, but the months-long process wouldn't work in competitive land sales. He urged Congress to raise loan limits, speed up approvals, and offer pre-approval.
I think it's really important to, increase those loan limits a little bit to help, you know, with the rising costs of everything, and to maybe expedite the process of the paperwork to kind of get people the financing quicker. But the tools are really amazing and really helpful for somebody that, you know, our farm, we were struggling with, we were reaching the end of our equity and needing a new operator to come in, and that was me. Having that access to maybe more funding and, you know, for the farm ownership loan, that was quite a process to start. And, you know, it took months. And in another case, you might have somebody else outbid you while you're going through all the loan approvals.
Wicks testified on behalf of the National Farmers Union. I'm Wayne Northlund.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Yeah, we got J.R. Vazane on the phone lines from Millstone, from the ranch. We got Becky Hillier in the house as well. You know, Becky always, if you guys don't follow Becky Hillier on Facebook yet, she's a former Montana This Morning anchor. She was a KTVQ news anchor and worked in other big markets across the country as well, but former Miss Montana from Miles City, and she's great. You know, we were on the Big Sky Honor flight with her back in the day, but she's always sharing these bright side stories, looking at the bright side of things, and or just funny memes and things like that. And she shared a story about J.R. Vazane one time, and another update, and it was so inspirational. It was such a great story. And I was like, Becky, we got to get J.R. Vazane on the show. And she's like, let me work on it. Let me see if we can get him. So she got him. We're going to get him here in just a second. But first, Judge Dan Wilson, since we ran out of time before the last break, did want to give you a chance to just get some final thoughts out there. Thanks again for your time this morning.
You bet. First, on the question of GOP endorsement or any other political endorsement, as a judge and a judicial candidate, it's beyond my ability to either ask for, use, or accept a political endorsement. So the First Amendment says politicians and parties can say what they want, endorse whom they choose. But as a candidate for judicial office, that's beyond me. So I appreciate all the support I get from across the political spectrum. And I'll share this story with your listeners. I mean, this was very critical to me. When I first started running, I attended an event by invitation. I was speaking afterwards with a retired partisan elected legislator, and he said, you know, I'm really going to support you this time. And I looked him straight in the eye and I said, why are you supporting me? And he said, well, we've watched your rulings. We've gotten to know you. We realize we're not going to win every argument in front of you, but at least we'll have a fair shot. And I thought, I can accept that sort of statement all day long because I thought it was honest and candid and really told me where he stood as a person who, as I, is interested not only in upholding our Constitution, but respecting the rule of law. And we don't rule based on our feelings, at least I don't. I don't rule based on what I'd like the Constitution to be. I rule based on what it says, and more importantly, according to the choices that were made by the drafters and then the voters who adopted it. It's not about feelings. It's not about agendas. It's not about anything other than being faithful to what we have been handed from the people of Montana, which is their agreement as to how they wish to be governed.
And that's all we're asking for right now.
Yeah, go beyond that.
Just a little bit of fairness, a little bit of justice back on the Montana Supreme Court. All right, Judge Dan Wilson, great to have you on the show as always. I know we'll catch up more down the road here as well. Thanks for taking phone calls from listeners as well. That's the kind of transparency we as Montanans really like and frankly expect to see as well from all the candidates. All right. Well, Becky Hillier in the house here. Becky, it's always good to see you. I kind of teed it up a little bit earlier, but you're always sharing these bright side stories, looking at the bright side of things. Bring us back to, this had to be a few months ago, but you were telling me this story about J.R. Vazane, and you can tell his story way better than I can.
Well, and he can tell it way better than we can, of course, but just kind of giving you the highlights of it, J.R. Vazane was a bareback rider for the PRCA, and he was riding in September of 2018 at a rodeo in Texas when his horse reared backwards and fell right on top of him, and it fractured a couple of his vertebrae. And he didn't really have much feeling below his belly button in his legs or anything. And they airlifted him to Houston to a hospital, and he started physical therapy, you know, shortly after his injury. He was told at one point that he might have to get used to life in a wheelchair, and he found a different physical therapist because he just wasn't willing to settle for that. He's a man of such strong faith. His family is so supportive. And through that, and just through his wonderful attitude and perspective on everything that's happened to him, he has gotten to the point now where he does have some sensation. He tried out some robotic legs and has a set of those now, thanks to his rodeo community and family all getting together and making that a reality for him. Because what he really wanted to do, Aaron, at some point after he retired from professional rodeo, and that retirement was forced, obviously, after his injury, but he really was passionate about training horses and getting into the cow horse field. And so now that he has those robotic legs, he is able to stand upright. He's able to work with the horses. He's able to do what he really wanted to do and participate and compete in some of these cow horse competitions. And it's just amazing, because someone who had such a devastating injury not only happened to him, but his family as well. And they have kept such a positive attitude. They've stayed on the right track, and he has bounced back to the point where he's still able to pursue his passions. And he's such an inspiration to people in the rodeo community, but he really needs to be more well known outside the rodeo community as well, because his injury and his story is not rodeo specific. It really does resonate and inspire people from all walks of life.
That's right.
Just about this indomitable human spirit that he has to survive, and the faith he puts in God. He's a very godly man, and everything he does is colored under that, is through that spectrum of his strong faith, and he's going to get better. Just an amazing positive attitude that I think a lot of people in that position would sit in their chair and wallow in self-pity, and he has not done that. He's such an inspiration to everyone.
Well, I messed up my back, you know, in the military, and, you know, jumping out of helicopters and airplanes and all the other stuff you do and everything, and I remember being laid up for 3 days, and
that was tough, right?
Yeah, I mean, you start to think about, you're like, man, I'll never get to do this ever again, I'll never get to do that ever again, and then you slowly got to figure out, but you don't realize how much of a strain that can be on you mentally and emotionally.
Absolutely.
Until you're laid up like that, and that was just for 3 days, let alone months or years.
Right.
Well, let's bring the man himself onto the program right now, J.R. Vizane, I think, joining us from the ranch in Melstone. What an honor to have you on the program this morning, sir. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks. I actually don't know that I need to be here. Becky, you told that story perfectly.
No, we're glad that you're here, JR, because you're the best spokesperson.
I don't know if I could add any more detail.
Well, I find you so inspiring, and I know that Sage introduced us in Fort Worth about 3 years ago, and I was working for the PRCA at the time, and I had this storytelling series I wanted to do, and I wanted you to be the first story in that series, and you were all on board for it. I was super excited, and then the series didn't get the approval back at the home office that I needed in order to get the ball rolling on that. But your story is just so inspiring, and I was telling Aaron about it, and I said, you know, people, everybody needs to know him, not just people in the rodeo world and the Western world, but everybody needs to know you, JR, because you are awesome.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yep, no, I think Lord puts the right people in our place at the right time, so just appreciate you letting me on here to hopefully share a little bit of inspiration and encouragement to folks.
So, yeah, before we talk more about just kind of, you know, the background here and how you fought back from all this, how are the new legs, how are they, especially out on the ranch where, hopefully you don't have too many gopher holes and things like that?
So I'm in the seventh year of my injury here. It was 2018, September this year marked 7 years. So I've adapted, and I have a handful of tools that make ranch life doable for me. And so the legs themselves, they're from a company in the United States, Indigo, and they're not self-balanced is the only thing. So for functionality purposes wise, actually, they're a little tough, but they're great to be able to get up and go walk and walk up the road and walk around, and it feels pretty near normal. So They're an amazing tool. I'm very indebted and grateful. I'm actually in the process. Let's see, that would have been 2021, I think, when I got them, and I wore the battery out. So I'm in the process. They're fixing it up, and I'm in the process of trying to get that fixed and get a new battery. They are a phenomenal tool.
You kind of feel like Robo Dad. I remember the movie RoboCop when I was a kid. Do you kind of feel like Robo Dad as you're cruising around on the ranch?
It's hard to explain what it feels like because I have no sensation hardly from the belly button down as far as normal feel. I have some sensation, some burning, some tingling, some different feel. It's all different. So it's kind of weird to explain, but it feels like I'm walking, like the whole gist behind them. I did some machines in therapy. And you visualize walking, you try to walk, you do the stuff. So that's the machine itself is like that for my own personal therapy. So it actually feels normal. It feels like I'm walking.
Wow. That's incredible. I remember there was a Dateline NBC reporter I got to meet back in the 90s, and he was paralyzed, I think, following a car accident. And he talked about riding a horse in northern Iraq, I think with the Kurds, and he said how riding the horse felt like walking again, you know, because because of the movement of the horse left to right, left to right, left to right. So fascinating to hear your insight. All right, we got to take a very quick break here. More with J.R. Vizane right after this and what he told the Luttrell brothers on their Team Never Quit podcast.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, if you guys know the story of the lone survivor, or if you watched the movie, read the book, The Lone Survivor, you know who Marcus Luttrell is, a Navy SEAL veteran, and his brother, Morgan Luttrell. I believe they're both Navy SEALs, but they have the Team Never Quit podcast. And I saw J.R. Vizane was on their Team Never Quit podcast. In fact, J.R., Becky was telling me that podcast was kind of a good turning point in your life as well. One thing that stood out to me as I saw just a summary of this podcast, you told them about how after you had your first in-shoot rodeo accident, that's when you had a come-to-Jesus moment, and that's when you turned your life around. I guess describe the come-to-Jesus moment and what turned your life around and really what helped you to recover from this injury, which could be so devastating and just could destroy almost anybody else.
Yeah, so I was raised in a Christian home. I wouldn't dub us as every Sunday churchgoers, but we weren't far off either. I come from a long line of a broken family, divorces, and I actually didn't even know my real dad till I was 15. So we've always leaned on our faith. I was raised right. I was raised in a home that taught me how to have a relationship with the Lord. So then when I went to college and started professional rodeo, and you throw $300,000 at a young punk kid and tell him not to fall in love with the world, that was a hard thing for me to say no to. So in 2015, I had a horse actually hurt. I got hurt, broke a couple transverse processes off, and that was kind of the wake-up call for me. I was living a life of a rock star and doing all the things I swore I'd never do. And my testimony is that at that rock bottom moment, I said, here's the deal, Lord, I've been ignoring you for the past couple years. I want to do this right. So if you promise to get me out of this mess, I can't promise to be perfect, but I'll do my best to do right by you. So when I got hurt, I was at a good spot. I was at a good spot in my relationship with the Lord to know that it wasn't a punishment or it wasn't something that he was punishing me with. And that is where I leaned. Now, since then, I've learned a lot of life lessons and had to do a lot of surrendering and perspective change since then. But yeah, that was initially where I turned and where I still turn every single day for strength, because to be honest, life in a wheelchair is not easy. And I don't care. There's been plenty of them that have done it before me, and plenty of them that'll do it after me, but none of it's easy. And I'd be lying if I told you that it was fun. So that's where I get my joy. That rock is where I get my joy, and I owe it all to the Lord for sure.
So what you earned over $1 million in the PRCA, if I'm reading right here, what, six-time national finals rodeo qualifier? You were a high school rodeo champ, college rodeo champ. But it's interesting how you talk about how, you know, living this rock star life is also what led you to rock bottom.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, the word does say it, don't fall in love with the world. If you gain the whole world and lose your soul, what good is it? And I definitely have felt that in my life for sure. There's nothing more important to me than that relationship, that hope, that peace that surpasses all understanding. Being a husband, being a dad, those are the things that matter. Spending time with those that you love and enjoying every moment.
Becky, yeah, what do you want to throw out there too? I mean, I was looking more at the Team Never Quit podcast here. I know we've only got a couple of minutes to go here, but I guess my next question is, like, how do you stay positive? I know you don't tolerate people complaining about what they got or what they don't got too much. And you don't seem to like excuses too much based off of what you told the Latrell brothers.
Well, since I was 4 years old, as far back as I can remember, as far back as my memory will let me remember, I wanted to be a cowboy. I wanted to be just like my Uncle Duncan, who he rodeoed and he trained horses. So I always wanted to rodeo and I always wanted to train horses. There came a spot in my recovery at about the year mark where everything I'd ever got in my life, I had worked for. And so I had never worked anything harder in my entire life than trying to walk again. And there's this moment, I never asked why me or why this happened to me or any of that, but I started asking him, why am I not getting what I feel like I deserve? I've never worked at anything harder in my entire life. I'm trying every single day. Why is my hard work not paying off? And the small, still voice I heard is, you got to trust my timing. So it was at that level, at that moment, that I surrendered. And I'd gotten okay with life looking the way it looked. We were still figuring out how to ranch. We were still running cows. I was started a leather business, was doing leather work again. But the horse riding side of my life being different was really keeping me frustrated. And through the course of that podcast, I got on that podcast and they asked me what I'd be doing if the wreck hadn't happened. I said, I'm doing exactly what I'd be doing regardless of the wreck. I've adapted. I've figured out all the ways to keep doing all the things that I want to do. I haven't had to go get a real job yet, so we're winning. The only thing that I would like to do is, if I always had a dream of getting in the ring, cow horse world, and so when I get walking again, that's what I'm going to do.
Working
and
on that one. Well, J.R. Vazoon, what an honor. We got to get you in studio here for much more time, because this time flew by, but what an honor to chat with you. God bless you, and thank you so much for sharing your story. Let's do more of this.